Welcome to the People in the Red Vest, a podcast of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, the IFRC. I'm your host, Alexandra Sasha Goryshek, and in each episode, we feature inspiring, surprising, and thought-provoking conversations with people who dedicate their lives to helping others.
This Red family is a group of people who come together regardless of their culture, country, creed, language, or religion to do good for others. So the Red Vest represents kindness and sacrifice to me. Most importantly, it emphasizes that kindness and sacrifice have no language, race, or religious barriers.
My guest today is Dr. Fatma Meriç Yılmaz, the president of the Turkish Red Crescent, or as it is known in Turkey, Kizilay. Dr. Meriç Yılmaz, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Sasha. Thank you for having me here. It's a great pleasure and honor for me.
Last July, you were elected as the first woman president in Kizilay's 155-year history. What do you think is the significance of that, both for the organization and for you personally?
Well, it's not a very easy question for me, actually. When we look at the history of the Red Crescent, which is a very deep-rooted humanitarian organization, as you said, a history of 155 years, we see that many women have made significant contributions by working and volunteering at the forefront with heroism. But as you stated, there has never been a woman in the captain's seat of the ship. When I think myself, how I feel, I might say that, first of all, I know that it is a very big responsibility. And of course, it's a very big honor for me. But when I think effect to the ship, I must say that as the Red Crescent family, we are all on the same ship. And I believe that whether the captain is a woman or a man, it will not have much impact on the speed or route of the ship. So I do not look at the way that the captain is woman or man. Maybe when we look at the woman volunteer side, it might be more important to create a vision and ideal for the female members and volunteers which work in our movement, so that they can look at the women leadership and might say that one day I can lead this ship. So there is no barrier for me. So it might encourage the women volunteers. So this part is more important for me, I guess.
Certainly, you provide an inspiration for other women following in your tracks. If I may turn to the biggest event in the last year, which was certainly the earthquake that hit Turkey and northern Syria just a bit over a year ago, how is the recovery going so far? How long do you think it will take to really recover? And what are some of the challenges that Kizilay is facing in that?
The recovery activities following the earthquake have been continuing from the very first moment, thanks to the tireless efforts of our teams, volunteers, and donors from all around the world, including our Red family. As you stated, we are now in the recovery phase. It's going to take at least 2 more years to have the permanent houses for the survivors. When we look at the area, we see that all of the survivors are at least in a container now. And the permanent houses has begun to be distributed. And of course, everyone is trying to turn back to normal life. But of course, there's still a long way to go. As the part of the normalization process, cash assistance is an important component. Türk Kızılay has disbursed a significant amount of cash totaling 2.2 billion Turkish liras till now, covering both the acute and recovery phases. And another important project for the socio-economical empowerment is farmer and small and medium-sized enterprises support programs. And it was very important, which provides a vital cash assistance to farmers and tradesmen and thanks to this project, now they have their businesses back again with small amounts of support, I might say. These initiatives aim not only to restore economic stability, but also to strengthen socio-economic resilience in the affected regions. And now our commitment extends to establishing community service centers. It is in the most affected provinces. They are going to offer a range of psychological and socio-economic empowerment programs in the recovery process. And we plan these community service centers as the main points which are going to talk with the survivors for what is needed. And maybe my favorite one as a mother and an academician is libraries, which we open 9 of them and try to continue to increase the number. These libraries have a high-speed internet connection, computers, online and press education materials, and volunteer teachers, which provide a silent and organized place for about 44 students. When we look at the environment of the students actually at the recovery phase, we saw that in the containers, they do not have a silence and suitable place to make their lessons available. We saw that these libraries are very important for every students in the area. So now we aim to increase the number of these libraries to 50 till end of this year. So I might say, as a conclusion, we always say the same sentence from the beginning to the end. Yes, it's a long way to go. However, we are committed to be with the victims and healing their wounds until the last earthquake survivor finds a warm home.
That's a wonderful sentiment, and I'm sure you will make it happen. With all the tragedies that we saw happening last year, there were also some uplifting, heroic stories that we encountered. Is there any particular story that you remember that gave you hope or inspired you?
Well, we have many, but let me tell one of the most striking memories in my mind. Actually, we know that in the earthquake times, we had many branches and many volunteers in the earthquake zone, and they were also the victims of the disaster and experienced very serious losses. Let me tell you the story of my namesake, Fatma Hanım, who was the president of the Kızılay Kahramanmaraş Women Branch. It was 1.5 months after the earthquake, and we stopped by Kahramanmaraş on our way to other affected cities. I was staying in a tent with Fatma Hanım, I remember. She had an uncomfortable sweater on, and I asked her, "Wouldn't you be more comfortable if you wore pajamas or tracksuits, Fatma Hanım?" And she gave me this answer. "At the moment of the earthquake, my house was still standing, but many people's houses had collapsed. The weather was very cold, and especially the women had inappropriate clothes on. So I directed them to the mosque, gave them everything in my house, and dressed all the women in the mosque. At the end, I had no clothes left for myself." Actually, I was surprised because we have social markets where we distribute clothes, and one of the largest social markets where we distribute these clothes was under the management of Fatma Hanım, the same person. I said, "You are distributing clothes to everyone in that market. Get yourself a tracksuit from there, a comfortable tracksuit." And she replied, "I am the trustee of the all clothes that came for Kızılay. I cannot take that trust and use it for myself." We said, "You are also a victim of the earthquake. You should use these clothes." But we couldn't convince her. She turned me and said, "You are my sisters, my younger sisters. If any of you have a spare tracksuit in your suitcase, take it out for me. Otherwise, do not insist me on getting clothes from Red Crescent." Still, I remember this night, and it was really very sensitive for me.
Yes, yes, I can imagine. One thing that we could see, that the world could see from the response, was the sheer capacity of Kizilay to react quickly and at scale as the auxiliary to the government. It showed clearly that the national society has become a very powerful and effective emergency response organization. What do you think are the reasons that Kizilay has been able to get to this point, to achieve this?
First of all, thank you for this sentence. We tried to do our best from the beginning till now. When we look at our system for disasters, Kızılay is an institution which have strategic initiatives and collaborative efforts, and of course, disaster management plans to enhance our preparedness and response capabilities for such of disasters. But when we were at 6th of February, we saw that disaster was much more bigger than we have expected or imagined for our life. It has a very big impact of the area. When we look at our system, we see that Kızılay has five regional disaster management directorates, 12 disaster response centers, and 31 logistics centers covering all regions of Turkey to carry out disaster preparedness, response, and recovery efforts. And this extensive network, of course, ensures us a comprehensive coverage and efficient coordination in our disaster response activities. In Turkey, we have a national disaster management program. In this program, everything is written during a disaster time in which parts you are going to be responsible. And according to this plan, Kızılay is responsible from the food maintenance. Of course, we are not only responsible for the food part, but we have the primary role to coordinate, to report all the food maintaining NGOs and the other parts. But when we look at the other parts, which in disaster, what is needed, we have many other parts which we are involved. Actually, I might say that Kızılay's transformation into a strong and effective disaster response institution is our strategic planning, of course, collaboration with the other government bodies and NGOs, and continuous improvement strategies by aligning with international standards and leveraging technological innovations, I might say.
Are there other things you'd like to mention as Kizilay's strengths, in addition to what you've just told us? Or are there things that you think as a new, fairly new president, you could improve or work on? Where do you see are some of the weaknesses, perhaps?
When I look at the strength of our national society, maybe I might mention about three main things. The first fact that Türk Kızılay is a deep-rooted and time-honored organization since its establishment, and this built an important trust in our community. This is one of the main strengths of our society. Second one is the volunteers at Kızılay. Of course, all of the national societies, I think, is going to mention about that, but we are really focusing on the volunteering system and increasing the volunteers day by day. Today, we have more than 300,000 volunteers, and especially during the emergencies such as earthquakes, we can reach our volunteers quickly and effectively through the web-based volunteer management application, which we call gönüllüol.org. This is very important because when we look at these hundreds of thousands of volunteers, there are many different volunteers from different backgrounds. Sometimes they are doctors, sometimes nurses, psychologists, chefs, tailors, and hairdressers. And we can communicate with these volunteers at any time from using this web-based volunteer management application. And anytime we can have them involved in our management system. And the third one, I must say, while I am to thinking about our strength, the contribution of our donors, of course. Donations are entrusted resources for us, and thanks to these resources, we can cover the costs of the disaster preparedness, response, humanitarian and social assistance programs. And Kızılay has become a strong institution with its branches, volunteers, employees, and donors because of these strengths. However, looking to the future, I believe there are areas that need to be developed. We know that the crises are everywhere in the world now. All of the crises are increasing, and the number of people in need is increasing every day. However, our resources are not increasing at the same rate. Therefore, in order to ensure sustainability, we need to have a source of regular, unrestricted income along with donations. So in this way, we can reach a capacity to sustain ourselves. To achieve this goal, we are developing and focusing to increase our income-generating activities. For example, we have established our own company in logistics sector and have become the largest disaster logistic company with the specialization in Turkey. This company enables us to intervene more quickly and effectively in disaster situations. And additionally, with this operation, we also manage the blood operations ourselves. And we transfer blood to 1,160 hospitals nationwide, 720 hours. These income-generating activities not only ensure our sustainability by covering our costs, including logistics operations, employee salaries, vehicle maintenance, and other expenses, but also provide us a very strong and professional capability. And this logistics company has become the major strength of us during the earthquake response, I might say. So maybe the most important thing I want to emphasize is focusing to the income generating activities.
So we spoke about the earthquake and Kızılay's activities in general. I'd like to turn to another challenge that Kızılay has been facing, which is its support to the refugees of the civil war in Syria, both in camps and urban and rural neighborhoods. It's one of the largest refugee populations in the world. But we don't see it in the media anymore so much. What is going on there, and what are some of the challenges that Kızılay is facing in this respect?
As you already emphasized, Turkey continues to host the largest number of refugees in the world. Turkey is hosting approximately 3.6 million registered Syrian refugees, as well as around 300,000 refugees of other nationalities. Since the onset of Syrian crisis in 2011 and the subsequent inflow of the migrants, new needs have emerged within the society. In response to this situation and to address these needs, Kızılay initiated humanitarian aid activities targeting the refugees through migration services. Central to Kızılay's efforts are the community centers established in 2015. These community centers serve as vital hubs for delivering a range of services, including protection, livelihood programs, psychosocial support, and social cohesion activities for migrants. And maybe I might talk about the implementation of Kızılay Card, also known as Emergency Social Safety Net, ESSN. It's the world's largest cash program funded by EU and implemented in the partnership with Minister of Family and Social Services of the Republic of Turkey and IFRC and United Nations. This Kızılay Card project plays a very important role in providing emergency assistance, integration services, and essential aid to migrants in need. When we look at our history of this service as a part of these efforts, Kızılay has reached out to a total of 2.5 million migrants through 21 community centers, 3 child protection centers, 8 temporary shelter centers, and 10 mobile teams across 23 provinces.
I'd like to now turn to something that you already touched upon at the beginning about your role as a woman leader in Turkey and also in the IFRC network. But also, I'd like to look at the role of women in leadership in general. In one of your speeches not too long ago, you noted that more than half of Red Cross and Red Crescent volunteers around the globe are women. And you mentioned this earlier as well, that there is a lot of women volunteers, but women are not equally represented in the humanitarian sector at the top levels, the leadership levels. Why do you think that is, and what needs to be done about it?
In Kızılay, we often say if Red Crescent had a gender, it should be woman. Today, I can translate this into if kindness had a gender, it would be woman. Kindness, compassion, and mercy, the desire to heal someone suffering, are nature's strengths that come from the very nature of women. Therefore, I find it very normal that women constitute more than 50% of those in the field, because women are much more prone to this. As for the leadership role, there is a topic we constantly discuss at GLORED. Is the reason why women come to leadership positions less, because they are not allowed, or because women lack this courage? Maybe both could be valid to different extents, but my thought is this as a woman. If a woman finds this courage within herself, it doesn't matter if it is in IFRC or any other field. If a woman wants, every woman can achieve it. I believe that this power exists in women to the fullest extent. However, there is a common belief that I experienced myself at one time. We have a home, we have children to take care of. The humanitarian field requires being ready for duty at any moment. And when we are saying a duty, we are talking about war zones, disaster zones, very tough areas. So I think maybe we should also ask ourselves if we are the ones who cannot dare too much. When I first met Margareta at GLORED, she told me in our first conversation, you will be the next president, right? I was the vice president at that time, by the way. While there was so much talk about women's leadership, a voice inside me was saying, this is not something I can do. And I felt uncomfortable. I had children at home, and in case of any disaster or emergency, I might have to go abroad or out of town. Would I be brave enough to leave them behind? There were many questions in my mind. And of course, I gave a hesitant answer. And when she heard about that, she said, what do you mean? You have to, you must. Later, when I had to take on this role in a way that I couldn't really control, I thought about this dialogue a lot and told myself, yes, it's very important for us to step forward and take leadership, not only for ourselves, but also for those who come after us. Therefore, I sometimes think that even if it is not very important for ourselves, we do not have the luxury to think about that. When we have such an opportunity and we feel a responsibility in this sense, sometimes we need to show courage and step forward. I have experienced very busy days during my presidency, which have now passed 6 months. But aren't women always very busy? Don't we get tired of taking care of our children while working and pursuing a career? Or aren't we the ones who have to think about the many different things at the same time while also studying? When I look back on my experience or what I am experiencing now, I think a woman can easily adapt to this intensity and might change much easier than a man.
You mentioned the Glow Red Network that was established to foster women in leadership in IFRC. Can you tell me more about the Glow Red and whether you think it's making a difference?
Actually, we might all expect that. It was a surprise to see the impact of Glow Red unfold much faster than we expected. With the introduction of quotas, more than 50% of the IFRC governing board is now made of women. This is a significant achievement. But is it enough? I don't believe so. When we come together in Glow Red, we discuss how this is not enough. Because the main goal of Glow Red is to ensure diversity in leadership and support women in having different qualifications and encouraging men and women to co-lead. While doing this, it's important to make sure that there are no barriers for women, making them feel brave, and of course, providing them with specific training to be able to reach these positions, thus facilitating the formation of communication channels. Glow Red has progressed at an incredible pace since its inception, surprising even us. The power of women's energy is truly impactful. However, we are continuing to work down. Glow Red now possesses a strategic action plan that works not only within the IFRC, but also within national societies to include women and help them reach specific positions. This plan involves educating women, bringing them together, and fostering a network of support for one another. More than just a network, I would say that it's a force of women for Glow Red. And I believe the greatest source of this power is the energy women give to each other.
You mentioned that 50% of the governing board are now women. And late last year, the IFRC elected its second only woman president in its history. So is this really a sign that the efforts have been working? What do you think the female president of IFRC signifies for us?
Actually, since taking my office, I have been amazed and happy to see women in nearly every area of collaboration with IFRC. The Glow Red initiative, which I mentioned earlier, surely plays a role in this. For example, Jesse, the president of IFRC Turkey delegation, Natya, vice president of the International Federation, Birgit, the IFRC regional director, and Kate, our IFRC president, and myself, all of us are women. When we come together, we become a team that can almost understand each other with just a glance. For me, it's truly valuable that the current IFRC president is a woman, because it's important, especially during such challenging times, that we as women share the same feelings and come from the same team. And essentially, all of these women I mentioned are part of Glow Red Network. I am extremely happy to be working with them. And I see that Kate's close dialogue with national societies after being elected as the president, her efforts to meet with everyone individually, listen to them, visit them, and her willingness to increase this coordination, I believe is an indication that women are one step ahead in terms of communication skills.
How about in Turkey and in Kizilay in particular? I know you were involved in founding the Turkish Red Crescent Women, which I understand exists now in almost 200 branches and representative offices across Turkey. What was the goal of creating this group and what has it achieved so far?
Actually, in different meetings, I always try to talk about the difficulties we faced and our efforts to increase the number of women managers in Kızılay. When it came to the electing a board of directors for a branch, we advocated that at least half of them should be women. However, achieving this goal was not easy. We often encountered the problem of not being able to find women to recruit. Then, at some time, we gathered as a board of directors and realized that women are out of there in the field, and we take a strategic decision to create a separate Kızılay Women Organization for all of the branches. Kızılay Women Branches, along with the working groups under the coordination of the headquarters, started to generate very successful projects targeting women, children, and disadvantaged groups. And as the projects were developed, women began to participate more in the field with the support. And during this process, a pool of competent and trained women who would take part in the management or even become presidents in each branch emerged. We achieved this not through top-down quotas, but through bottom-up approach by creating a pipeline and allowing it to develop spontaneously. No matter how many instructions we gave, it was never reciprocated in these branches. However, when we broke it from bottom-up, we now have many candidates. We have willing candidates, and I believe that with these candidates and talent pool, we can achieve much more easily. We have an aim now to have the president positions of the branches, at least one-third of them as women, which means at least an eightfold increase for our national society.
That sounds quite significant, yes. And who are some of the women humanitarians who inspire you, or other historical figures or people in your own life?
When I look at the history of our national society, there are many heroic women in our history with different professionalities. But however, maybe because I am also a medical doctor, who inspires me most is Safiye Hüseyin Albi, which is the first Turkish nurse. She was the pioneer of the modern nursing in Turkey and was a woman full of compassion and love of her profession. One of the most important representatives of the Hilali Ahmer, Dr. Albi worked with Besim Ömer, who was also a very important figure in our history, and attended the nursing and midwifery training that started under his leadership. She worked as a volunteer caregiver during the Balkan and Gallipoli wars. She pioneered women from Istanbul to become nurses as an honorary nurse. And she was passionate about the nursing profession, has received the Florence Nightingale Medal and the Red Crescent Honor Certificate, and is one of the thousands of heroes of Red Crescent. She inspires me most.
Kızılay also has a reputation from its earlier days for being very innovative in terms of how it supports its work. One of the most interesting examples is a private enterprise that makes and sells a very popular brand of bottled water. How did that come about? And can you tell us more about Kızılay's entrepreneurial approaches to its work?
Actually, we already talked about the Kızılay Investment Group and the income generation activities under this umbrella. But I think the mineral water is a thing different, a historical place to tell. Gazi Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, who is our founder of Türkiye Republic, during the War of Independence, fell ill in Afyonkarahisar and regained his health by drinking mineral water from Gazlıgöl, and he ensured the establishment of a factory in this location. And in 1926, he generously gave the privilege of operating this factory to Kızılay. And this was the beginning of our income generating activities. So it has a special place for us. Today, our beverage factories in Afyonkarahisar and Erzincan are hubs of activity, producing a wide range of refreshing beverages to meet the diverse tastes and preferences of consumers. And we had a strategic decision and established Kızılay Investment Group in 2018. And after investment group was specially created to produce income for our national society for more goodness, this mineral soda factory was also included to this investment group. And I want to emphasize again, besides income generation, our investment group provides us a more professional and fast action ability in our main humanitarian areas, just like the example I have given in Kızılay logistics story. And when we turn back to the mineral soda, we see that after including into the investment group, the income and the professional side of this mineral soda has increased a lot.
If I may turn a little bit to your personal background, you mentioned earlier already that you have a medical background and your hero is a nurse, right? So you clearly have a deep fascination and understanding of the medical field. You have a background in medical research and public health. How did you get started and what drew you to medicine and health?
I remember when I was a little child in primary school, they used to make us do career tests and they would ask which profession you should choose and what your tendency is. Every time I took those tests, I always got medicine and healthcare. When I think about those tests now, the reason was that those tests would ask questions like, do you enjoy helping people? Do you feel happy when others are happy? Are you affected by people's emotions? And now I guess because of the clear answers I gave to those questions, medicine and healthcare always came up in those tests. Now I think there is a great beauty in helping people in the field of medicine and healthcare. However, if you ask where it is one step further than healthcare in touching and helping people, I can say clearly that it is the Red Cross, Red Crescent moment. Because when you talk about medicine, only sick people come to the hospital and you try to cure that illness. And sometimes there are no treatments for that disease. The times when I tried to avoid medicine the most were when I faced patients with long-term illnesses like cancer or genetic conditions without a cure or a leukemia in a child, for example. These situations affected me a lot emotionally. We doctors are often warned against letting empathy become sympathy because getting too emotionally involved can make it hard to keep going in medicine. So I chose not to focus on these areas in my career, and I took laboratory medicine instead. But I always did my best to help anyone who came to the hospital, even if it wasn't my job at that time. Doing too much empathy, sharing the pain of others, can be exhausting in the medical field, and that's why I didn't choose those areas, as I said. But the Red Crescent, Red Cross movement is much more than that. Sometimes you make someone smile, sometimes you heal the ones of those in need, and it makes me feel very happy in this sense. As Red Crescent volunteers, we are just the messengers, and I think we are very lucky for this. Maybe we couldn't have such a big impact of our own, but the contribution of our generous donors give us this opportunity. And this is a great chance and a source of pride for us. I am grateful for the existence of Kızılay every day because I know I am in the right place to help people.
We asked you to bring an object to this interview. What did you bring? And could you show it to us?
I am going to take my object first
okay,
to show
please.
You.
Please.
I currently have a flower in my hands, which is a symbol of Kızılay Women Organization. In the middle of the white flower, here you see there is a small red crescent.
Yes.
This flower is also a historical object for us and is very important. When the women section of the Red Crescent was first established in the early 90s, there was still a war going on. And the families of the soldiers who went to war were also becoming in need in some way. While men were at war, women were left behind. So the Kızılay women took the stage by putting a small crescent inside white flowers. And they handcrafted these red crescent flowers and organized a bazaar to raise funds, inviting international guests to this event. they used these flowers and the donations they collected both to heal the soldiers and to support the livelihoods of the children and women. Years later, when we were reconstructing Kızılay Women organization, we thought about what our symbol should be. And the white flower with a red crescent in the middle is what all of us thought of. The red crescent flower is very special to us. And this time, we designed our badges from iron and set Kızılay Women as rare as flowers, as beautiful as flowers, but as strong as iron.
In closing, with all that's going on in the world, at the end of the day, who or what inspires you, brings you comfort or hope?
For me and everyone who knows me around, the answer is clear: children. I have the ability to forget all my worries and find happiness in the eyes and smiles of children. The hope and strength I see in children give me hope for the future. I feel these emotions especially strongly in earthquake-affected areas. The earthquakes we experienced on February, which we call the disasters of the century, affected 11 million people and children in our country. Almost everyone's homes were destroyed and some lost their loved ones. And we were all deeply saddened by this disaster. However, every time we go to the field, children run to hug us. And in those moments, we feel grateful and say, these days will pass, and we will continue to work so that these children can emerge stronger. I see children as very innocent and fragile beings who can be easily affected. But at the same time, they are also so resilient and quickly bounce back and continue to face the future with a smile. Therefore, children should be our main focus, because we will be leaving this world to them. And if we can make them better, more compassionate and more prepared, perhaps they will do better things in the world of the future.
The name of the podcast, as you know, is People in the Red Vest. What does the red vest mean to you?
For me, first of all, the red vest symbolizes the red family in our federation. This red family is a group of people who come together regardless of their culture, country, creed, language, or religion to do good for others. So the red vest represents kindness and sacrifice to me. Most importantly, it emphasizes that kindness and sacrifice have no language, race, or religious barriers. As Kızılay, we organize the International Red Vest Awards ceremony every year. During this vibrant event, we gather to appreciate the stories of kindness both internationally and in Turkey. We form a jury to evaluate these acts of kindness, and then thousands of us gather in the hall wearing our red vests to watch these stories of kindness. And afterwards, we honor the individuals behind these acts of kindness with awards. And I want to express once again how happy we would be to see our AFRC family with us at the International Red Vest Goodness Awards ceremony in Turkey.
Thank you, Dr. Fatma Meriç Yılmaz, for sharing your expertise and insights with our audience and allow us to get to know you a little bit.
Thank you very much, Sasha.
Thanks for listening to People in the Red Vest, a podcast of inspiring stories as told by people from the IFRC. This podcast was produced by Malcolm Lucard and me, Alexandra Sasha Gorishek, with production and engineering support from Damien Naylor. Promotion and marketing by Maxime Bouchard, graphic design by Valentina Shapiro, and web support from Chris Acqua and Patrick Tai. For more inspiring stories, subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts.